were two golf courses in the county near Annapolis, Maryland, where I live. The cost to play those golf courses were $100. These are public courses. I came out here, and of course, I'm in heaven because of the public courses owned by the city. Number of rounds played in the United States have dropped drastically over the last 10 years. Thousands of golf courses closed. 97% of those closures are public and municipal courses, and yet you've been able to maintain that. So thank you very much. It looks like you're going to have about 400,000 rounds this year, as you did the last couple of years. When I tee off in the morning at 8 o'clock, which I am, it's going to cost me $19 as a senior. What struck me was if you just added $1 to that round, you would make $400,000. It looks like the golf courses are going to lose $300,000 this year. You cover that loss. You have an extra $100,000 plus the $300,000 that you wouldn't have to pay, and you can do those park rangers in East Portland and some other stuff, and I pay an extra dollar. So I pay $20 instead of $19 instead of $100. I'm more than willing to do that, and I can't imagine any golfer not willing to pay one more dollar to play golf on a great course in a beautiful city and support other. So I would ask you to think about that.
Donald, can I just make a comment on that? Because I can forward to you the emails we got the last time that was suggested. And this is an important conversation because golf is an enterprise bureau. Golf is an enterprise section of a bureau, meaning it has a self-contained budget and it covers its costs. And the last
Online, it looked to me like it was going to lose $300,000.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that this has been floated in the past that they put a surcharge on fees to cover something that's outside of golf, and we'll certainly forward you all the emails. But
you don't need to do that.
No, he was suggesting a dollar surcharge to cover a non-golf service. That is a. It happens to be an idea that conceptually I support. It provokes very strong feelings from the fiduciary board that governs the golf enterprise business and the customers. So I just wanted to put that out there. But I think the most important part of your comment is that it's still a relative, it's good value to play in all golf courses, and it is a way of raising revenue. It just provokes very strong feelings when it's come up before. So I just wanted
To me, coming from a private industry, I mean, the golf court is an asset of the city, just like a parking space in the city, and they ought to be valued as an asset of the city. So, anyway.
And maybe we can look into a scholarship program there. I know that the hour that was allocated to Portland Parks is up. I just wanted to check with Mike and Jeff. Is that correct that the golf program is anticipated to lose $300,000 this year?
Yes, they are. They have a reserve fund. So, and as Commissioner Fish mentioned, it's an enterprise fund. I think the broader question is, are our rounds competitively priced so that we don't lose number of rounds? And I'll ask our golf manager. As a matter of fact, we discussed yesterday an economic impact study for the Delta Park area that includes the golf course, the racetrack, and Delta Park. And I can plug that into that analysis as well.
Okay, thank you. Lastly, there was a sentence in the full budget package that stated CBO continues to recommend that the Bureau perform an analysis of all the elements of the Bureau's assets that require ongoing regularly scheduled maintenance so that CBO and the Bureau can work together to develop a funding plan. Is that not done? And if so, it seems to me to be such a basic assignment that it should be. This sentence implies that they've requested it multiple times. It's not been done. First of all, if that's correct, then why isn't it being done?
Donald, the vast majority of all our assets are inventoried and we have condition. However, not every bench. And so there remains a gap of objects in the park system that are not in our asset management database as inventoried with their condition. So we're trying to close the gap, and we have gotten from last year's budget a new asset manager asset inspector position that will help in kind of closing that gap.
Okay, thank you very much.
Other quick lightning round questions?
Lightning round question. Mike, I'm looking at CBO's infrastructure project ranking summary sheet, and I'm looking at your major maintenance one-time requests. It looks like you're getting all of your one-time requests are covered by CBO's recommendations. You rank two other things, vegetation monitoring and natural area asset management, apparently slightly higher. So those aren't covered. But otherwise, it looks like all six of your asks are ranked by CBO for funding. Is that correct?
Yes, Commissioner. And the two that aren't is because they're not capitalizable. They're green infrastructure items. And so they're not eligible for that ranking process.
Okay. Thank you.
So, Andrew, Ryan, anything else that you want to add from your analysis? Okay. Thank you very much. We appreciate this good presentation and good discussion. We're going to move on to the next bureau. As you says, we queue up more bureaus than we can get to typically in a session, so I think it's safe to say that we're going to do justice by PBIM because we have enough time left to do that, but we're not going to be able to do justice by housing today. You think that's a correct prediction, Andrew?
What time is it, 11:10?
Yeah,
the only question is whether we want to start the housing conversation.
Okay, all right, well, let's see how we do, and if housing is still standing by, then again, that's the straw you draw when you're the last bureau in these parades in the budget process. So come on up, Carmen. Okay, let's try to do this in 30 and 30. So. Okay, yeah, Carmen, we're going to try to get you to be succinct because we have a bureau director after you who's not going to be around for a little while, so go right in.
Okay, well, good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. Carmen Merlo, the director of the Portland Bureau of Emergency Management. I want to acknowledge our Budget Advisory Committee members in the room and welcome our amazing neighborhood emergency team volunteers who are in the council chambers with me today. Our mission, as you know, is disaster risk reduction. However, I would argue that citywide resilience should not solely be the responsibility of one of the smallest bureaus in the city, but actually of all city bureaus, including every citizen. And so we do rely on our neighborhood emergency team volunteers to serve as force multipliers for us. So in the very brief 10 minutes that we've been allotted, I want to quickly cover a few areas, starting with significant budget issues. Of our overall budget, less than 40% comes from the general fund, and our burden on the general fund is minuscule, just 0.2% overall. However, for a very small bureau, we have a deceptively large budget, and that's because of one particular grant, the Urban Area Security Initiative grant, our Homeland Security grant, that we serve as the administrative pass-through agency on behalf of a five-county region. However, it's a much smaller grant, the Emergency Management Performance Grant, that we rely on heavily for not just personnel, but also to make up the costs of our rent at our Emergency Coordination Center, as well as the cost of our Bureau of Technology Services interagency agreements. So very quickly, I will go through the four decision packages that we've asked for. The first of these is, and I should add that all of them are one-time asks. So the first package is for a limited-term planner to assist individual bureaus update and put together continuity of operations plans. As you know, every bureau is expected to have a continuity plan. These are services that protect human life, health, property, and that deliver services that the public relies on, particularly during emergencies. All bureaus did complete a plan in 2013. However, many bureau plans were not adequate and have since been revised, and some plans that were only minimally compliant with FEMA standards are now outdated. Currently, only 56% of bureaus have adequate continuity plans, and we acknowledge that the effort to create these plans has been challenging for many bureaus. So as a result, PBIM is asking for one full-time continuity planner to meet this need. Without funding for this position, the Bureau would need to delay the development of other key emergency response plans, including volunteer and donations management, resource management, and private sector coordination. Our second request is for a limited-term volunteer program developer, and this is in support of both our Beacon and our Neighborhood Emergency Team program. I think many of you are familiar with our Neighborhood Emergency Team program. This is a program that we run in partnership with Portland Fire and Rescue, where we provide 28 hours of training in everything from light fire suppression, search and rescue, disaster medicine, and how to shut utilities off. But you're probably less familiar with our other program, the Beacon, which has the unfortunate name. Beacon stands for Basic Earthquake Emergency Communication Node, and I brought in a little show and tell for you back here. The Beacon program is an important and innovative program that provides pop-up communication hubs. So think of these as hyper-local neighborhood extensions of our emergency coordination center. The idea is that within 24 to 48 hours after an earthquake, we would set these up, and basically what's inside these are a canopy tent, radio equipment that communicates with our fire stations and with our emergency coordination center, as well as a small cache of first aid supplies. There are currently 48 beacons throughout the city, and you have a map of them as one of your handouts. These are primarily in parks and in school fields, and we use the Portland Plan's 20-minute neighborhood concept to site these. We put two in every neighborhood hub, which is how we got to 48. Like the NET program, Beacon is an important element of citywide earthquake resiliency strategy. It seeks to equitably serve all neighborhoods and depends very heavily on volunteers. Unlike NET, however, the Beacon program has a very heavy equipment maintenance and tracking component. The big challenge we have is that we only have one person serving not only as the citywide NET coordinator, but also the coordinator for the Beacon program. And so this would assist not just in moving the dial on the number of active NET teams, but making sure that we actually have a viable Beacon in every neighborhood. Our third request is for ADA upgrades to the Sears facility. I want to thank Council for their allocation of funds for the fueling station, which includes one new fueling station on the west side at Sears. However, we put together in 2013 a master plan for Sears, and that was a phased approach to building the site out. The first step was to do the rezoning. We did that 2 years ago. The next phase was for the fueling station. This is phase three, adding the ADA upgrades. And so some of the things that it includes is installing an elevator, correcting the stairs, renovating the restrooms, revising the door locations and hardware, and it includes additional improvements to the parking lot and to stormwater upgrades. The final request is for a seismic assessment of a prioritized list of city buildings deemed essential for emergency response, and that includes the 911 center, Sears, the Justice Center, both Kirby building and garage, as well as the garage at First and Jefferson, that also provide continuity of operations at City Hall, the 1900 building and the Kelly building, and then finally, many of our parks, which do serve as both gathering locations and respite for emergency response workers. I would ask you to consider that complete neighborhoods are not just those that have easy access to services and amenities that people need or want, but also complete neighborhoods include the provision of emergency services, which includes active NET teams and beacon locations. So again, in the interest of time, I guess I'll just stop it right there and thank Council again for including emergency preparedness as one of your budget priorities.
Thank you. I guess I'm curious, where are these beacons located when they're like at Wilson High Field or something like that? Where do you find them?
We do try to secure them as best we can, and I'll just be very candid and tell you that a few have walked away. But some of them are indoors at parks locations, and we are trying to site more of them indoors. Obviously, having them indoors prevents easy access, but having them outdoors also presents security challenges.
And then my other question was the ADA upgrades for the Sears facility. I guess I'm curious why that wasn't on the capital funding request when the council adopted a policy of dedicating half the one-time for transportation, emergency, and parks.
Andrew can correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that because it's not currently an occupied operational facility, it's not included as part of the capital infrastructure, current capital infrastructure.
It's not repair or replacement. It's expansion of infrastructure.
It's a critical piece of infrastructure. Does that count for anything?
It certainly would in your funding decisions. Yeah. So the 50% is set aside for repair and replacement of existing assets. It is now an existing asset, but not yet in service. So it occupies a little bit of a gray area, but it generally is seen as an expansion. But by all means, if it's a critical infrastructure, then there's still other one-time resources available for that.
Yes, please, Doc.
Two things. One, well, before that, I think you do a great job.
Thank you.
In an environment where nobody pays attention until there's a national a disaster, and then it's too late. I do have my 1 week of emergency supplies stored away from my house in the backyard, so if the house falls down. In putting that together, I had a heck of a time on your website trying to find what I needed or suggestions. In fact, I had to send an email to your department and have somebody walk me through it. Now, I will admit I don't have a 14-year-old home who can help me on the internet, but it took me hours, and I never found it until somebody gave me directions. So if there's others out there like me that want to do it and can't find it, that's a hindrance. The other thing that struck me, again, coming from a private industry where we had to have continuity of operations plans, I mean, we weren't allowed to say, oh, I can't get to it. 56% of the bureaus have it, which tells me 44% don't.
I want to clarify that. Every bureau has one. However, only 56% have what we would call compliant with FEMA standards. So the other 46% are in need of some additional work.
So what does that mean? If the building were to fall down and a bureau doesn't have that operations plan that conforms to FEMA, does that mean that they're inoperative?
Not at all. I mean, in some cases, the fact that they perhaps haven't identified alternate work facilities, succession planning, those could attribute to why the plan itself isn't adequate. But I want to assure you that all the bureaus do have a continuity plan that ensures that they can maintain essential services even after an emergency.
Okay. Thank you.
In case of a disaster, an emergency of some sort, perhaps a major seismic event, who's in charge? Are you all? The mayor is the chief executive, I believe. But how do you mesh with the state, the local, mm-hmm. the highway patrol, National Guard? How does that work?
Right. FEMA will tell you that all disasters are local. And so for an event such as an earthquake, we have what's called unified command, which means we've got police, fire, water, and transportation equally in charge of the tactical operations. The mayor is in charge of overall strategy for the city's recovery.
Comments, requests?
Question, if I might. Carmen, in your budget tool, you identified, I think, clearly what populations and what areas in this city are disconnected from the NET teams and the Beacon program. What part of your decision packages will assist you in achieving your goal of improving who is engaged and who is connected to the work that you're doing?
From an equity perspective, Dante, I would say certainly the limited term position for the Beacon and NET program. We are trying to make inroads into increasing the diversity of our neighborhood emergency team volunteers. We did a couple of unique things this past year. We did a special training in New Columbia, and we hope to bring more of that training out to the neighborhood so that they're not coming all to the fire station too over at 122nd and Sandy. So increasing outreach to underserved neighborhoods and bringing the training to the community as opposed to having them come out to us. Thanks.
So would it be fair to say that you would prefer that to be an ongoing position rather than a one-time.
Absolutely, Commissioner.
Other questions, comments, requests?
Well, I just have to say something because my husband is in the room here. He's wearing a vest. He's in camouflage. And I've seen how hard all the volunteers work in this. This program is a wonderful way for people to be involved in their city. So, and I second Dante James's concern, because right now with one person working there, they go for low-hanging fruit, the people that have the time and energy and availability to volunteer. But a second person would probably allow you to do more outreach. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
No.
Carmen, on the Beacon program, CBO had a concern about a one-time ask for somebody to develop the volunteers of the Beacon program, and they said, well, wouldn't this have to be ongoing? And my understanding is that you actually think that once you got Beacon teams up and running, it would be possible to keep them going without a digital person forever.
That's true, and I have Jeremy Van Kieran, who is the net coordinator, to talk about that.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. The way we've got the program designed is that we need a team of 8 Beacon volunteers for each one of our 48 Beacons, but the idea is that once we can get a team up and running, they're self-sufficient, and so the impact is relatively low. I'm sorry? 30 minutes.
Another question I had is, this isn't a PBM budget question, but it's a general citywide budget question. Would it be fair to say that from an overall emergency preparedness perspective, seismically strengthening the Portland building should be a city priority?
Wow. Yes, Commissioner Novick, I do think strengthening the Portland building should be a citywide priority.
On the equity issue again, is there a specific effort in terms of volunteer recruitment and coordination to deal with the issue of languages?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Could you repeat the question?
The question is: Are you not only looking at equity in terms of racial and cultural equity, but are you also looking at improving our language capability among the volunteers so that we can reach different parts of the community that don't necessarily have a great command of English? We've got more and more of those?
Absolutely. We've substantially increased the number of applicants to our program to the point where I prioritize folks into the program who do have particular skills such as fluency in another language.
So that this particular net team has this, that?
I haven't tracked it formally, but I'm beginning to track that. Previously, we had very, very few volunteers that had language skills beyond English, but that's changing to the point where we do need to track it.
So just going back to Commissioner Novick's question about the seismic issues in the Portland building, do we have an inventory of all city facilities and assessing their seismic upgrade needs?
I saw Bob Keita in the room. We currently don't, and I believe that OMF is currently undertaking a facility condition assessment of all city-owned buildings. Part of that will include a prioritized list of 15 buildings. Is that okay?
And I think that's a good thing to have, especially prioritizing which ones are the first to get done. Then going back to the net team issue, I know that net teams do need continued coordination from your staff. People move away, they lose their skills or whatever. Plus, the last time I checked, I think we had less than 3,000 trained volunteers citywide. So, and again, reaching into the communities of color and the underserved populations. I know you and your staff do great work. I find it hard to believe that they can get everybody trained up within a year. And that, as I say, I believe that position should be ongoing. Just because there's so much work to do in this regard. And how many staff do you have altogether?
16, Commissioner.
And many of them are grant-funded and dedicated to doing particular other things, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, so that's not a big set of folks to do all the work citywide.
Thank you.
With the tournament coming up, Commissioner, maybe one way to think of it is once we get to the round of 16, there will be as few teams in the NCAA tournament as there are employees at PBM.
I wanted to come back just on the West Side Operations Center, Carmen, because I know you stated that there is a master plan, you know, for the site. One of our concerns, though, is that we don't yet have a plan as a city in terms of who are going to be the tenants for that site. And as a result, we don't really have a long-term funding plan in terms of both who would pay for the ongoing, you know, maintenance operations of that center. So one of our concerns about doing the ADA upgrades in you know, lacking that plan was, are we sort of putting the cart before the horse? And does it make more sense if we had one-time money to invest in a process to get to that plan? Because council is going to need to make the decision not just about one-time for ADA upgrades, but what are the ongoing costs of this facility going to be? Make sure we set aside funds for that.
Well, I think it's a chicken and egg problem. You can't put occupants in the building unless there's ADA upgrades. So I think the sooner we can make the building occupiable, get tenants paying rent to OMF to help support that building, then we can start working about looking into other occupants and building tenants.
And the ADA upgrades are going to be needed regardless.
Exactly.
They wouldn't be dependent on what kind of use of the building.
That's right, Commissioner.
We do know about at least some prospective tenants. I actually ran into Mike Abate in an elevator this morning at a garage, and he told me that Parks would be interested in moving City Nature employees to that location. And I know the PBEM would like to have at least some maintenance equipment, particularly de-icing, at that location as well. Yeah. Whether we can afford it is another question.
Well, and I think our concern is there are ongoing, I think we have early estimates, I mean, you know, potentially $750,000 for O&M, you know, major maintenance on the facility. And I think, I guess what I would say is are we ready? Making ADA investments means we're ready to occupy that building and we're ready to set aside the ongoing funding to pay for this into the future. And so that really is the question that council's facing right now. It's not, do we make the ADA upgrades and then figure out what to do? It's, are we going to occupy the building? What are we going to put in there? And are we going to set aside the ongoing funding for that? And there's not currently a request for that ongoing funding on the table. And so I think that's really our major concern about this.
I think Bob might have something to say.
of all of our inventory of buildings.
So as far as the building condition assessment, we have the contractor on board. We expect the draft reports to be in by this July. And from there, we will be going forward on the seismic assessments of the 15 buildings Carmen has either identified or within the OMF portfolio.
Great. Thank you. Well, thank you very much. And thanks to all the
volunteers
who are here and for all that you do. Obviously, I think the council understands the critical role that you play in the system. We have a small bureau with a big job, and it simply is not possible without what you do. So thanks for being here, and thanks for being ready.
Mayor, can we suspend the rules to give it some round of applause to our net team?
Thanks very much. Okay, let's move equipment and people and get ready for the Housing Bureau, please. I'm sorry, Christy, did you have anything else that did you need
no,
to add about PBM?
No,
okay,
we got them covered. We will jump in, I promise.
Yeah, I know. It's horrible.
Well, I'm sure you'll be so scintillating that he'll be wide awake. No, I was just trying to be accommodating. It's not like I have to get here cracking noon something at 12:30. Yeah, no, I'm good. How about you, Yari? I haven't heard any nervous.
I actually thought it went to one.
So. How are you? Thank you for being here.
Pleasure always. Take care.
Okay, Ms. Manning, I think the floor is yours. Welcome.